Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my young friend, Brendan Kraft, engineering and producing the show. Good to see Brendan on the other side of the glass, off and running on Tuesday. It's the 24th of June. Brendan, this is El Dia de San Juan Day, which traditionally marks the beginning of the summer rainy season. That would be, of course, known as the monsoon. And there, believe it or not, little bit of a chance there, if you've taken a look outside, some cloud buildup, so we might get a little rain today, which would be kind of cool.
Man, happening. I hope so.
Yeah, don't we all? That'd be kind of cool, happening on the day of San Juan. Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zilclo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Center, as we continue to grow five radio stations under one roof. This one is the news talk station in town, 1030 KVOI. We have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to my program live anywhere in the world at buckmastershow.com. Also the place for our podcasts on my website when we do our telephone interviews, which we will be utilizing extensively today. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. In the wake of recently enacted tariff escalations, most notably on imports from China and Mexico, the spotlight has returned to the global trade policies shaping U.S. agriculture. While the long-term impact remains uncertain, early signals suggest these policy shifts could affect production inputs and export competitiveness. In the agriculture industry, the tariffs could have a huge impact because the agriculture economy is deeply integrated into global markets. According to the USDA, more than 20% of all U.S. agricultural products are exported annually, with China, Mexico, and Canada among the top designations. Let's talk a bit about how these tariffs could impact Arizona agriculture with Dr. George Frisvold, professor in the University of Arizona Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics. Dr. Frisvold, how are you, sir?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
What are the impacts when we look at tariffs on Arizona agriculture? And of course, Arizona agriculture is a huge economic driver, isn't it, for the Arizona economy?
Yes, agriculture is very important, and trade, as you said, was very important to agriculture. Because the tariff policies keep changing, it's kind of difficult to estimate exactly what it might do to the Arizona economy. We could talk a little bit about what's at stake. So in terms of like Arizona exports to the rest of the world, if you look at how that filters through the whole Arizona economy, that the exports create over 7,000 jobs, contributes about $2 billion in sales. Imports are also really important to Arizona's economy. Importation of fresh produce from Mexico going through Nogales contributes nearly $1 billion to the Arizona economy and creates nearly 5,000 jobs. Often you hear in the news about importation taking away jobs, but in the case of Arizona, importation from Mexico is actually a big job creator, especially in Santa Cruz County. So combined, ag exports and ag imports contribute over $3 billion in sales to Arizona's economy, and that supports more than 12,000 jobs. So that kind of gives you a sense of, here's the system that's in place before you have any changes. Tariffs are taxes on the inputs and outputs, and so that they're going to transform how that works.
Of course, Arizona is a major supplier of crops like lettuce, citrus, and cotton, with agricultural powerhouses like Yuma pumping out billions of dollars in goods. An increase in tariffs could make these products pricier, I would assume, Dr. Frisvold.
Oh, sure. I mean, well, In terms of things coming in, tariffs are basically sales taxes on imports. So things that we purchase will be, you know, more expensive. And then there's the exports from Arizona, outside to other places. And what countries can do is they're called retaliatory tariffs. So if the U.S. raises taxes on imports coming in from, let's say, Mexico or Canada, Canada can impose taxes on the U.S. exports, going out. So producers can get hit in a bunch of different ways. So like for agricultural producers, they import a lot of fertilizer, they're importing farm machinery, they're importing ag chemicals. So the cost of all their production is going to be higher. On the other end, importing countries could tax what they're selling, and that could affect, their sales. So for example, we estimated that Arizona exports at least 88% of its cotton. And that's how we were able to measure stuff going directly from Arizona abroad. That was 88%. That's probably a conservative estimate of exports, because if something is shipped to California and then it goes to China, that would be an export, but it doesn't show up in the statistics. So Arizona cotton is really dependent on exports. And so if China, we've already started doing retaliatory tariffs, but if other countries start to impose tariffs on cotton, that will affect, Arizona cotton sales. If you think of, Yuma as this kind of winter vegetable center for North America, and when you think about in the wintertime, or like from Veterans Day to Easter, most leafy greens are coming from almost all of them are coming from Yuma. Well, that's where everybody in Canada gets their leafy greens too. So if so trade restrictions on that could have an effect.
I wanted to ask you, Dr. Frisvold, about the labor situation in places like the Imperial Valley and in Yuma, where predominantly migrants are the ones that are doing the picking and packing. And how is that now, with this crackdown on immigration, going to impact Arizona agriculture?
I think it's going to affect Arizona agriculture less than other places, like, for example, Florida or Georgia. And the reason is, in Yuma, a lot of the agricultural labor lives in San Luis. They get up before dawn, they cross the border into Yuma, work all day, and then go back.
Hmm.
And they're going back and forth legally. And Arizona was actually an early adopter of the E-Verify system. So we rely on migrants, but it's this kind of more orderly, seasonal kind of verified legal system. So the proportion of ag labor that's undocumented in Arizona is actually like much lower than California, much lower than Florida and Georgia. It's also a question of whether they're going to actually enforce those laws on farms. But the system in Yuma is highly reliant on immigration, but it's pretty much people commuting back and forth across the border and living in Mexico.
I never thought of it that way. It's a good point that these are people, actually commuter agricultural workers, coming from Mexico, and then they get up in Mexico, they come into the United States to do the labor work in the fields, and they go back and have their evening at their home in Mexico. Never really thought of it that way, Dr. Frisvold.
Yeah.
We've got about a minute or so, why don't you give us some concluding remarks about tariffs, and again, how it might be a mixed bag for Arizona agriculture?
I mean, right now it's kind of hard to say. There's a Yale Budget Lab and the Peterson International Institute for Economics. They keep trying to provide up-to-date estimates of what will happen, but the tariff landscape keeps changing a lot. Where consumers could be hit are things like, things produced from agriculture. So the Yale Budget Lab predicts that things like shoes and purses in the short run, the prices could increase by 33%. In the short run, you know, clothes 28%. Cars could be more expensive by about $6,000 per car. And the average household could be spending more than $2,000 more than they otherwise would. For agriculture, it's still kind of early to see if the tariffs have affected prices. Between March and April, prices for a number of things ticked up quite a bit. So like fertilizer at an annual inflation rate went up about 19%. Gasoline mm-hmm. went down, but farm machinery went about 4%. And trucks went up about 6%. Ag chemicals went up about 8% on an annual basis. And so farmers are not operating, you know, at huge profit margins. So if you're talking about, you know, 8 to 19% increases in their key input costs, that could really put a squeeze on them. It also puts a squeeze on food processors who have to use imported inputs. They're working on very small margins too. So if the tariffs increase their cost, that's a factor. Another okay. factor is you don't really think about food is like aluminum and steel. That's a lot of canned products.
Yeah.
And canned products are actually consumed relatively more by lower income people. So like aluminum can taxes could affect lower income people relatively more.
All right. Dr. George Frisvold, professor in the Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics at the University of Arizona. Doctor, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Take a break right here. Then Shelley Fishman on the road. Shelley on the live line is up in Alaska for a cruise. Boy, he's good timing. Get away and avoid the very, very toasty temperatures we've been having. All right. Let's take a break. Shelley's after the break.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
All right, Shelly Fishman, normally in studio with me. He's in a much more beautiful place, and that's the grandeur of Alaska. Shelly Fishman on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Where are you exactly, Shell?
Well, good morning, good afternoon. We're in Haines, Alaska, and that's a little town, actually, as part of the Inside Passage that goes up from Vancouver and up to the western shore, the west coast of Alaska.
Yeah, that's a beautiful area. I've been up in Alaska a couple of times, and you started all of your travels to the 49th state by visiting Vancouver, British Columbia. How was your reception there in Vancouver, BC?
Well, the Canadians are very friendly, and they were consistent in that. Vancouver is a really growing city. I hadn't been there in maybe 15 or 20 years. And the place has just grown exponentially. The construction of major buildings, both residential and for business purposes, has been just more than I could have ever imagined. And the architecture in Vancouver is it's eye-catching. I mean, some of it is mind-boggling. You just wonder what's holding those buildings up, because they seem to have, little bases and big tops. It's wonderful to see.
So, Shelly, the markets, we've had a lot of international news. I was a bit surprised Monday morning when I looked at the numbers that the indices were not reacting to the bombing in Iran.
Well, the markets have kind of been aimless over the past couple of weeks until today, because of the truce between Iran and Israel. We've seen a very good day today. I ran some numbers earlier, just year to date. The Dow is up about 1%, the S&P about 3%, and the Nasdaq's up about 3%. So the markets, if you look at a normal 12% growth per year, and that, of course, is an average, not anything that you can pinpoint in any given year, but we're about halfway to where we should be 6 months in.
So we've got a lot going on, don't we, right now, not only with the international markets, but as you say, the markets kind of have been drifting. What should we be watching, Shelly, here in the coming weeks?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, we have to see about the tariffs. Your previous guest was right on the mark when he talked about the effect of those tariffs on various industries. And those tariffs will affect industries, each one a little differently. So far, we've seen some inflation as a result of the tariffs that have been put on already. I believe that the next change is due for the 9th of July, and we'll see if the Trump administration goes through with those. But what we're seeing from the Fed, and we saw that as recently as this morning when the Fed chair was testifying in front of, I think it was a subcommittee in the House, when he said, look, what we're seeing in the economy is strength, but what we're seeing in the future is the potential for inflation, and therefore we're going to hold interest rates where they are for at least the next couple of months. And that presaged, I think, the kinds of experience that your prior guest was talking about, which is that as tariffs get imposed upon various countries and therefore various industries, what we'll be seeing is some price increases, and the Fed's primary mission, or two primary missions, one is controlling inflation, and the other is full employment. We have very close to full employment, but the danger imposed by tariffs on inflation is something the Fed has to worry about.
Last week, also, we got some guidance, Shelley Fishman, on the state of Medicare and Social Security. Unfortunately, the news is not good, is it, the new forecast?
No, it's a little worse than it's been. I believe it was the Consumer Bureau came out with what they said are the likely times during which Social Security and Medicare would essentially run out of money. And that had been 2035, 2036. They're now down into 2033, 2032. And what they're suggesting is that if the trends continue exactly as they are right now, Social Security benefits could drop for those people on Social Security by about 23% and Medicare benefits down about 11%.
Easy to fix, but politically very, very difficult, Shelley Fishman.
Boy, you really said it, Bill. These are not difficult problems to fix. We know how to fix them. We know the components that will get those monthly revenues from people who are not retired up to where they need to be to cover the costs of people who are already on Medicare and Social Security. But the political will to do that is just lacking. And as a result, these things will grow worse and worse as we approach these deadlines. And then what they'll have to do is more extreme fixes to make up for the fact that we now have about a decade of diminishing revenues into these trust funds.
You know, by the way, Shelley, as you were going on, I was hearing something very strange on the roof here in the studio, and I said to our fine young producer Brendan Kraft, I said, that sounds like rain. That can't be. Brendan's going, it can't be raining. And then Brendan says, it does smell like rain. Yes, we had a rain shower. So I guess monsoon 2025, Shelley Fishman, has begun while you're up in Alaska.
Well, what I can tell you is it's going to rain here any second. the difference is the temperature is about 55 degrees.
Yes.
And it is, you know, very cold for those of us whose blood has thinned out by living in Arizona all these years.
Shell, I'm curious, and this is, you know, normally you go to some beautiful, not that Alaska isn't beautiful, but you go to some beautiful European destinations, and I'm just wondering, what's your kind of take on Alaska, your first visit up there, Shell?
Well, it's gorgeous. I mean, you can't get around the fact that, you know, you're in these what amount to fjords. There's snow on the tops of the mountains, and the mountains themselves are just, you know, covered with fir trees and greenery. Yesterday, we were hiking and passed several red signs warning us about bears and, you know, what to do if you were accosted by a black bear or a brown bear. So that's a little frightening, but it's just absolutely beautiful. And we're about to go to an eagle conservatory where they are dedicated to preserving the American bald eagle.
So what are we looking for, Shell, before we wrap this up with you? What's the feeling about this? If the truce holds, certainly Wall Street likes that. As we talk about so many times on this program, Wall Street and the folks who work there love stability. Maybe we might be getting a little bit. Who knows?
Well, again, if this truce holds, then I think it'd be fair to say that the threat of war diminishes, and what we'll be seeing then is just the threats to the economy. And then we go back to, you know, where we were a couple of weeks ago, talking about what the effect of tariffs will be and how the Trump policies will affect the economy in general. If, on the other hand, the conflicts in the Middle East, raise their heads again, then, in the short term, war frightens markets. In the long term, it's good for the economy. That's, sounds cynical, but that's the way it's been in the past.
All right, Shelley, you've got about 40 seconds left. So you're going to, you're doing a cruise, right?
Yeah, we're doing a cruise. So we everything is guided. We're not on our own very much. And that's going to continue for a couple of weeks. So I'm going to be up here. Next week, we'll do the show from somewhere here in Alaska. And then the following week, I'll be home right after the July 4th weekend.
All right, Shelley, enjoy Alaska. I loved it up there. Other than the fact that my last trip there, as folks know, I broke my arm. So
That was horrible.
Yeah, I know. So watch your step when you're out hiking. Keep an eye kind of on the ground because it can be a little bit treacherous. So have a great time, Shelley.
Thanks, Bill. See you next week.
Okay. Shelley Fishman on the Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management, on our Live Line today from Alaska. Coming up next, this is going to be good. The author of a new book titled Weird Universe, Everything We Don't Know About Space and Why It's Important, on this somewhat rain showery, do I dare say it, afternoon in Tucson, Arizona. Let's take a break, mid-show break, then back more with Buckmaster.
This Independence Day, join the listeners for a reading of the Declaration of Independence in front of the Udall Recreation Center at 7200 East Tanker Verde Road at 8:30 in the morning, July 4th. Celebrate Independence Day at Udall Park, 8:30 in the morning, July 4th.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. And as that bump music says, it's raining all over the world. Well, I just took a quick peek outside. It's sunny as can be, but it did rain during the Buckmaster Show. Maybe for, I don't know.
At least 2 seconds.
At least 2 seconds, according to my wonderful young producer, engineer Brendan Kraft. Hey, I'll take it. So it does count. On El Dia de San Juan Day, which traditionally marks the start of the summer rainy season. So it's very cool. 3384 East River Road, that is the address for Green Things and their sister business, Zocalo Village. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio here on the Buckmaster Show. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now on the live line Dr. Erica Hamden, a tenured professor of astrophysics at the University of Arizona, director of the University of Arizona Space Institute, as well as a commissioner appointed to the State of Arizona Space Commission. She specializes in building telescopes and developing technology to make telescopes better. Dr. Hamden is a TED Fellow. She is an if and then ambassador for the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And she has won many awards, numerous awards from NASA for her work in ultraviolet astronomy. She hosts a TV show and my old stomping grounds over at Channel 6 on Arizona Public Media. She is a private pilot, a science communicator on social media with over 200,000 followers, and she recently published her first book. It's titled Weird Universe, Everything We Don't Know About Space and Why It's Important. Dr. Erica, how are you?
I am great. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's a delight to have you on the program. There are a lot of excited scientists, and I'm sure you're one of them. After seeing these first images from that new observatory down in Chile, why is this a big deal? Tell our listeners about what's going on.
So these images were released yesterday from the Vera Rubin Observatory, which is a project that's been in the works since 2001, and actually the U of A has played like a huge role in it. We cast the mirror, which was like a really incredible technical feat, because there's the primary mirror and then the tertiary mirror, the third mirror. They're a single piece of glass, so they have like different optical properties depending on where you are in the mirror. We made that under the football stadium here at the U of A. And we also helped with a bunch of the detectors for the camera. But the reason that it matters, other than that it's like a giant telescope and is awesome, is that it's going to take a full view of the sky every few days and basically see how things are changing in space, like stars exploding and things forming and disappearing and stuff flaring. And it gives us this view of like the changing sky. Also, one of the things that they released yesterday is it's already found thousands of asteroids, and that we know of about 1 million asteroids in our solar system. And within a few years of this observatory, we'll probably know about 4 million more asteroids, just because it keeps track of everything that is like changing and moving in the sky. It's like just one of the coolest things ever. It's the largest camera I think that's ever been built. It has like a tremendous number of pixels. It's just amazing. I like looked at the pictures yesterday and I felt like I'm upset actually about like how how beautiful it is. It's so incredible, the pictures that they have.
This is a very expensive product, right? $800 million telescope. But there have been a lot of people. I think there was a piece in the Arizona Daily Star saying over 100 people. Many of them, I'm sure you know, maybe you may know all of them at the University of Arizona. That maybe not all of them, but a lot of them have contributed to the life of this project. When was this first even thought about, Erica?
So the original idea for it was decades ago. It was first like seriously proposed in 2021, and then they didn't really start any work until 2007. And it was originally like there's actually was a bunch of private money that went into it, and then the NSF contributed, the DOE contributed, and a few other government agencies. So the I think the total cost was a lot, but you know, if you compare it, like when we talk about telescopes that go into space, like the JWST, like that number is in the billions. And so I always feel like, oh, this telescope is less than $1 billion.
It's a bargain. it's a true bargain, right?
It's a bargain. Yeah. And the stuff that, you know, one of the things I like to talk about is all the things that we don't know that we'll learn from mm-hmm. these observations. And one of the key components is trying to understand, you know, the nature of like dark energy and dark matter, and having these really excellent high resolution images of the night sky, and like so deep because you can add up the images over time as you like take pictures of the same part of the sky. I think that it's going to help us figure out things like what is the nature of dark energy, how is it changing, and that information, like right now it can feel very like esoteric, like, oh, we're just learning for the sake of learning. But, you know, there could be stuff in there that's really actionable for us that, like, you know, one mm-hmm. of the things I talk about is Einstein developed general relativity, you know, over 100 years ago to explain the, like, gravity. But we use general relativity in GPS satellites. Like, if we didn't understand it, we could not actually have a GPS system. So I like to point out things like that, where it's like, well, we don't know what we're going to discover that is going to end up being like massively revolutionary for us.
Let me
and
ask.
In addition, we get some cool pictures.
Yeah, very cool. And of course, we've had great pictures from Hubble. But what's the difference? The obvious difference, of course, Hubble is in space, and the telescope we're talking about in Chile is land based. Generally, what is the difference in the way we process the information we get from these two telescopes?
So Hubble is almost like, it's like a surgical telescope. Like it is looking at a teeny, teeny, tiny part of the sky with incredible depth. The Rubin Observatory has this incredible wide field of view. So it's looking at like a 3.5 degree diameter field of view, which basically you can take a picture of the full moon and a bunch of stuff around it. It's a huge view of the sky, whereas Hubble images are basically like the area of a dime that's like 120 feet away from you. So the field of view is just massive, and it's designed that way so that it can take images of the whole sky again and again and again. Whereas for Hubble, like the field of view is so tiny that you have to use a ton of time, telescope time, to like revisit something and see how it's changing. Whereas for Rubin, it like kind of just does that. That's like its whole operating mode. So probably what will happen is we'll discover some really interesting transients, these like things that are changing in the night sky with the Rubin Observatory, and then it'll send out alerts. And for the most interesting ones, then the Hubble telescope can go and look at it in a little bit much greater detail. But it just like cannot cover the full sky the way that Rubin is able to do.
Dr. Erica Hamden is with us, tenured professor of astrophysics at the University of Arizona. She's director of the University of Arizona Space Institute. She's very excited about her first published book. It's titled Weird Universe, Everything We Don't Know About Space and Why It's Important. Before we take the break and go into segment number four, Dr. Hamden, let's tease a little bit from the book. How'd this come about? This Weird Universe book.
So I have a pretty active social media, and I post these fun and very accessible videos about space that I record in my backyard. So there's like a cactus behind me. And I got contacted by a publisher, and they said, oh, we love your videos. Have you ever thought about, you know, writing a book? And I was like, no, all my papers are very technical, technical articles. And they said, oh, we think if you did it in the same style as the videos that people would love it, because, you know, my idea with the social media videos is that I think anybody can learn anything if they are taught in the right way, and if they kind of have the time to like think about it. And so the book came out of that, of a feeling of like, space is so incredible and the universe is so wonderful, and I want to share that with people in a way that they can just pick it up. They don't have to know anything except just be interested, and really kind of open the universe to them, and give a little info of like, how does science happen? How do we know these things, like the kind of long history of humans and wondering about space?
What is the weirdest thing about our universe before we take the break?
I think so far I would say it's us, actually.
That's a good way to put it. We're the weird thing in the weird universe.
That's right. We're the weirdest part of the universe.
Let's pick up on that after we take our break. We're speaking with Dr. Erica Hamden, talking about her first published book, Weird Universe, Everything We Don't Know About Space and Why It's Important. She has 200,000 followers on her social media as a space communicator. And when is your next TV show coming up on Arizona Public Media?
So we just had a new episode that came out actually the same day that the book came out at the end of May. And we usually take a little break in the summer, so I'll be recording something probably in August that would come out in September.
All right, let's take a break right here. More with Dr. Erica Hamden. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday afternoon. Be right back.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Great time of year to get away to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. One of our great sponsors, been with us for years. Visit southwestnewmexico.org before you make the approximately three-hour drive, not a bad drive at all, east of Tucson up to Silver City. And when I say up, it literally is up, about 5,000 to 7,000 foot, depending on where you are in the Silver City area. And what that will mean is it's going to be cooler and you're going to have some delightful days and some lovely nights over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With us on the live line for a second segment, Dr. Erica Hamden, astrophysicist at the University of Arizona, director of the University of Arizona Space Science Institute, and she's published her first book titled Weird Universe, Everything We Don't Know About Space and Why It's Important, which grew out of her media, social media contact with over 2,000 followers. What would you like people, Dr. Hamden, to take away from this book?
So I think the main point is that the universe is really amazing, and it's much more interesting than we give it credit for. One of the things I return to again and again in the book is we, you know, discover something about the universe, or we notice something, and our assumption is like, oh, this must be exactly like it is on Earth. Like, for the longest time, people thought that the sun was made of the exact same composition as the Earth, but it was just on fire for some reason. And it turns out, of course, that the sun is made of basically completely different stuff than what makes up most things on Earth. The sun is mostly hydrogen, a little bit of helium, and it's powered by fusion energy, the energy of atoms. And that's, to me, that's so much more interesting and weirder and fun than just being like, oh yeah, it's just made of the same, it's just dirt. But that happens again and again, where we discover like asteroids and we're like, oh, maybe these are the same as stars, but they're not, they're totally different and interesting in their own way. And so I think it's funny because it's almost a commentary on humans, where we want, we're like, oh, a new thing, maybe it's exactly the same as all this other stuff, and it never is. And it's, to me, that is what makes it fun and interesting, how like the universe continues to mystify us.
And we can't, at least I can't grasp it. Maybe it's a human thing, the vastness of space and how, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it's really hard to conceive of that. And actually, I have a chapter that's about how big space is. And it's, and like, you know, I think one of the reasons why people like to talk about aliens coming to Earth is because they don't get how far away everything is, and just like how hard travel in space is. It's so hard. And to me, it's amazing. I like love it. And the pictures from Ruben yesterday, I think, give a sense of like just how deep it goes and how much stuff there is. And it's just unbelievable.
Do you share some of the opinion? There's a piece today in the Arizona Daily Star from the new director and CEO of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, Dr. Amanda Hendricks. She's very worried about the cuts from that are coming out of the Trump administration. She believes they're going to jeopardize what you and your colleagues do here in Southern Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our work is funded by NASA or by the NSF. I mean, the Ruben Observatory was a huge NSF investment. And the work that I do building space telescopes, you know, I have a project that we're going to launch into space next year that I'm the deputy PI of. That's a mission called Aspera. And, you know, that's a $20 million project. And almost all of that money comes to the U of A. So about, I think, 16 out of that 20 million is comes here, gets spent here, and like injected into the local economy. And I think a lot of people in Southern Arizona, they know that we're good at space, but they don't necessarily appreciate how much it adds to the economic activity that's happening around here. And especially with, I was appointed to the Space Commission, which is a new commission that the governor set up. And, you know, meeting people who are starting small startups that are related to the space kind of economy, commercial space, it's easier to get stuff into space. And, you know, people are locating in Arizona and in Tucson because of the expertise at the U of A and the, you know, students that we train and the kind of decades of experience that we have. So I think it's important that we keep that going. And, you know, I know that the leadership of the university has worked really hard to talk to our congressional delegation and meet with representatives and make sure that they understand the importance of funding all of that. And so I'm really grateful for their efforts. Feels like he's been around forever, but our newish president has been doing a great job of that. And I think I'm optimistic about it, but it is challenging. And I've been telling people, you know, the people that work for me, that it can feel like there's a lot of uncertainty, but that's kind of, for me, that feels like part of the job is like, well, things change and you have to adapt. But also in that uncertainty, there's an opportunity for change if you take advantage of it.
And look at the changes through NASA. You write a little bit about NASA's history. A lot of us just think NASA has been around forever. It hasn't.
Yeah. And even looking at the changes in NASA the last, you know, decade since the end of the space shuttle, NASA is trying new things out. We now have all of these companies that provide rocket launches, and that was a decision made, you know, almost 20 years ago to have NASA start funding commercial space programs. And to, you know, the analogy that I like to use is before that, it was as if the Wright brothers invented the airplane and then nobody else was building any airplanes. Like, you would never have commercial air travel. And, you know, obviously rockets are more complicated and there's other concerns, but what we really need is for it to become like a more straightforward, easy way to get into space. And then, you know, as a result of those decisions made decades ago, there's this blossoming of all of these different companies that are providing ride opportunities for most of my concern is like hardware, like getting telescopes up into space gives you such a better view, but lots of experiments and people. And so I view, sometimes it feels like the change is scary and some stuff, you know, you want it to be done in a careful and considered manner. But I also think that it's, you know, we have to rely on the people that we voted to represent us and see what happens. And
Dr. Erica Hamden with us, her new book, her first book, she's really excited about it, and it sounds really interesting, Weird Universe, Everything We Don't Know About Space and Why It's Important. We talked a little bit about what I find the weirdness about the vastness of space, and also I think we need to talk about the uniqueness of the planet Earth. When you look at how every planet observed so far is probably dead and incredibly inhospitable. So how unique are we, Dr. Hamden?
So, I mean, statistically, I want to be like, oh, we're not unique at all if there's, you know, hundreds of billions of stars and all those stars have planets. Like, statistically, there must be many Earths, but so far, we haven't found any. We know of about 6,000 planets around other stars, and all of them are awful. And I also think people don't really appreciate how bad they are. Like, you go there, even in a spacesuit, you're going to die right away. Like,
can you take a quick call here? We've only got a minute or so left.
Sure.
Let's go to the live line. Greg would like to join the conversation. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks, Bill. Dr. Hamden, besides seeing as far into the future or past as you can with the Rubin telescope, is there any application for our needs here at home insofar as checking out objects in the sky that might have been put up there by countries unfriendly to us, meaning the precision of the strike?
Go ahead. Thank you, Greg.
So, yes. So this telescope is able to basically find every single satellite that crosses in front of it. You can, like, see them go by. But for national security reasons, there's actually a protocol to deal with that where the data is sent to a secure facility, I think in California. And the postage stamps of all the things that are changing are kind of pulled out, and that facility sends alerts to scientists to be like, oh, maybe there's a supernova going off here. It also, like, weeds out things that might be satellites that we don't want people to know about. And then the unchanged data is released, I think it's like 3 days later, during which time the satellites will have moved. So from a security standpoint, we're not worried about where they are, but then the data is still there for scientists to use. Because originally the plan was to black everything out. And of course that obscures huge parts of the sky, and scientifically it's really challenging. But so this is actually, there was like a decade long discussion of like how to deal with that.
So that was a good question from listener Greg. All right, Dr. Hamden, going to have to run your book, Weird Universe. How can our listeners get a hold of it real quickly?
Any place that books are sold, Amazon, locally in Tucson, and you can call Antigone, but anywhere that you buy books.
Okay, Dr. Erica Hamden, we'll look for your work also on your TV show on AZPM. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you so much.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Hamden and Brendan on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.
Guy Cortero, Tucson's only live local news and talk. 1030 The Voice, a Bustos Media Station. Online.